Well, Happy New Year. We're jumping into our series for this year. And as you see in your bulletin, it says how to make this the best year ever. And for many of us, 2019 was maybe a year of hurt. It was maybe a year of frustration or maybe something bad. Some of you, maybe it was a year of just pure bliss and joy and excitement. But the reality is maybe our years are pretty much kind of somewhere in the middle. So even though if we had something really tragic and really bad, there's probably some serious joy, some serious upsides. If our year was filled with utter joy, there was probably some turmoil at some point along the way. So that's really, life is kind of about somewhere in the balance. But sometimes this new year, anytime we reach a new year, this milestone, it kind of forces us, like, I like to start over. I want a newness. I want to begin something else. And so that's something exciting that happens. It's not necessarily about a specific day or a time, but we like the newness. We like to have a second chance or a do-over or just to kind of clean the slate. And so we like that. And we're coming off of this holiday season filled maybe with the stresses of family or the joys of family or just concerns about life and what it is. And we're going back to school. We're going back to work. And we have a different outlook on things. And so over the next few weeks, we're going to look at some ideas that will help us have the best year we've ever had. And what are some biblical ideas and biblical principles that we can take and apply to this year to make it the best year we could possibly have, so it's not just another mundane, ordinary year. And today, we're going to look at our finances. How can we use our finances to give us the best year possible? We're going to use a great little resource called The 4 H's of Financial Wisdom by Ron Blue. And he's got a lot of material, so I'm going to warn you now, we're going to fly. We're going to go move through his stuff really, really quickly. With that being said, as you leave today, we have this one little sheet of paper take with you. You can go further in depth. It has a website on there. Get more resources and things like that if you need it. All right, so let's jump in. So the truth is that we're just selfish people, right? I mean, if you take two toddlers, put them in a room and put a toy between them, you don't have to teach them how to fight, right? They're all going to go for the toy, right? You actually have to teach them to be kind. You have to teach them it's okay to let somebody else play with your stuff. And as adults, we're not that different. As adults, when we have our stuff that we've worked for, that we want, we have a really hard time opening our grip. We oftentimes hold a death grip on the stuff that we have in our life, no matter what it is. But the truth is, when we look at it, when we look at our finances, when we look at the things that we have, we need to understand that it's a tool. It's just a resource that we've been given. And how can we use that tool, how can we use that resource to give us a better year than we've ever had? I think one of the challenges that we have when it comes to finances and money is really how we understand it. What we understand about finances. So I want to ask you a question. This is a question I've asked myself now for the last several months, and I want you to give some thought to it. The question is this: what is a memory you have about money, good or bad, from before the age of 12 that has shaped the way you view money today? So if you're a guest with us, those are our children above us worshiping in their way. The ceiling won't collapse, I promise you. But what is a memory you have about money before the age of 12 that has shaped who you are? And as I started to think about that question, some of the things that came up in my life. I remember when I was young, I stood in line for government cheese. Anybody remember government cheese? This is glorified Velveeta. I mean, it was processed cheese to the max, and they handed it out for free. It was pretty nasty stuff, but it was free. I remember standing in line in food banquets, food banquet lines for meals. I remember my back-to-school shopping included Goodwill, and those are my memories. I remember a couple Christmases coming out to the car, and somebody had left bags of wrapped presents for our family in the car. And so those are some of my memories that I could think of. And it shaped how I think about money. And rather than understanding it as a negative, I thought about, here's everything I didn't have, and I could have had a pity party, but I didn't have a pity party. What it helped me understand is, this is how I think about money now. It's shaped me. And how I view money is a way I've been without. And I want to make sure that what I have is taking care of other people who are without. See, it's given me a perspective that being without something completely without something has helped give me an awareness of other people who are without. But it carries this tension. If you've ever gone significantly without, you have a desire to want something. And so I carry that tension of making sure everybody has something met with this desire to have my Toyota Tacoma, doggone it, right? It is. I don't need it, but I really, really want it, right? So we carry this tension with us. And so today I want to provide us with some biblical framework where we're going to look at four H's. We're going to look at four H's of financial confidence and contentment. So real quick there, the heart, health, habit, and hope. Okay, those are the four H's of financial contentment and confidence. So we're going to use it as a starting point. The first element that you see on there we're going to talk about is the heart. We're going to talk about the heart. Now, all money issues, believe it or not, are a matter of the heart. Matthew 6:21 says it this way. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. There's that old adage that says, show me what you spend money on and I'll show you where your heart is. Show me where your priorities are. You see, there is the direct correlation between what we spend money on and what we value or what we feel is important. See, the truth is, behavior is going to follow your belief. Your behavior will follow your belief. Now, for each element, I'm going to show you a little picture. I'm going to show you a little graphic to help us understand what's going on. Today's graphic is simple. It's a heart. But you'll see the heart is broken down into four quadrants. Okay, so let's talk about those quadrants. I'm telling you, we're going to fly through this stuff, okay? So I just hold on. The first quadrant is stewardship. And that stewardship asks this question, do I believe that God owns it all? Do I believe that God owns it all? That's simple stewardship. So that look at Psalm 24. The earth belongs to God. Everything in the world is His. Everything. Now, in the Old Testament or the old mindset, a steward was simply somebody, it was a caretaker. It was somebody who cared for all the resources, the property, the people, the finances, everything. They cared for it. It was not their responsibility to dictate how the money or resources were used. They were simply managing it for someone else. That's us. We are the steward of God's resources. We are to pursue God's direction in everything that we have, right? And so we recognize that God owns everything. Everything is His, and we are His steward. God uses money in our lives to shape us. He uses it to move us in a direction closer to Him. Again, money is just a tool. It's just a resource. So the next quadrant. The next quadrant is faith. And faith asks this question, do I believe that my faith, that I demonstrate my faith through my finances? Do I demonstrate my faith through my finances? Faith is closely tied to stewardship. Having a financial faith essentially means that I'm not going to hold my finances with a closed fist. I'm going to hold my finances, my resources, and everything with an open hand and ask God's direction for its use. Look what it says in James 2. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. See, when we have financial decisions to make, we need to seek God in the question, what would you like me to do through this decision? And the truth is, God is not going to answer each of us in the exact same way. He's going to respond in a way that is very specific to all of us, and it only comes by an ongoing dialogue with our Lord. When we have that ongoing encounter with a living God, then we can know truly what He is asking for. So as we steward His resources and we're going to walk in faith and we're going to seek His direction, God is going to use those resources to sharpen our lives, to sharpen our and deepen our relationship with Him. Faith is vital to the money conversation, which leads us to the next one. It's wisdom. Do I believe that God's wisdom is true and available? Do I truly believe that? Look at what it says in James. If you need wisdom, ask our generous God and He will give it to you. He will not rebuke you for asking. See, when our hearts regularly seek God for wisdom in our finances, we can have a lot of confidence. We can have confidence in the fact that our financial future is in good hands. It's in God's hands. That doesn't mean you're going to be wealthy. Don't hear me on that. I'm not telling you this is not a health and wealth. It's having peace in our understanding about the purpose of our resources, about the purpose, the tools that God gives us. His word is full of wisdom, absolutely full of it. And God cares more than just about the tithe. God cares about your heart. God cares about everything you have, everything you do. God cares about you more than anything. The next quadrant of the heart is contentment. Question on that is, do I believe that what I have right now is enough? Do I believe my Ford Explorer is enough, or do I need my Toyota Tacoma? It depends on the day. But do I believe that what I have is enough? This is a culmination of applying all of those other things, of applying stewardship, of applying wisdom, of applying faith. Everything around us is telling us we need more. We need a bigger house. We need more shoes, nicer shoes. We need the latest phone. We need a new video game console. We need a bigger house. We need. Everything is telling us that. The writer of Hebrews is pretty straightforward on this, though. Look what it says in Hebrews 13. Don't love money. Be satisfied with what you have. For God has said, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. See, when we understand our role as a steward and apply that faith, apply that wisdom in the management of our finances, it means it becomes possible to be content. It's possible to be content. And ultimately, we choose contentment. Whether you have more than you could ever dreamed of or your finances are a mess, contentment is a choice. It is an absolute choice. And when someone surrenders to God the ownership of their resources, the ownership of their finances, hold on, because God is going to do some powerful, kingdom-minded, magnificent stuff through you and through your resources. See, but we have to settle these four quadrants of our heart. We have to settle that in our hearts, in our minds, if we're going to make a healthy financial decision. If we're going to live in confidence, if we're going to live in freedom in those resources, because money's a tool. That's all it is. It's a tool to shape you to be closer to God. It's a test to sharpen you, but also, I'm going to tell you, it's a testimony. If we can get our heart right around this, it's a testimony to the world around us about our relationship and the way that God works. All right, so that's the first element is the heart. The second element, the second H, is health. Second element is health. So we're going to work on stewardship, and we cultivate that. We cultivate wisdom. We cultivate faith and contentment. We now start to assess our financial reality. We start to do that with the understanding that God is the provider of our resources, and we start to assess the realities of what we have to work with and where we can go with them. And in reality, there's five things, and these five things within the health, the five realities within our health, are all at competition with each other. They're all working towards each other. And we have this graph, and it's like a pie chart. And there's five pieces of the pie. And each piece of the pie is competing within itself. All right? And so the first part of that pie is we're going to live. That's a portion of your money, a portion of your resources. It's where you're going to practice provision. It's where you're going to practice contentment. It's you put that stuff. And again, money's a tool. It's a resource. Look what it says in 1 Timothy. Since everything God created is good, we should not reject any of it, but receive it with thanks. Again, money in itself is not good or bad. It's just a thing. It's just a tool. And you should enjoy the things that it provides. See, the first one is to live. The next part of that piece of pie is give. Is give. This is where we're talking about generosity. It's living with an open hand and not a closed fist. He wants our hearts connected with the story. Look what it says in Luke 16. For neither you nor anyone else can serve two masters. You will hate one and show loyalty to the other, or else the other way around. You will be enthusiastic about one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. The next, I don't know when my kids have cried out to me like that. Good job, Jason. I don't think they ever did. Man. What's that? Only when you're not there. Only, that's right. That's right. Yay, daddy's gone. No, just kidding. All right. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So we live and we give. The next part of that piece of pie is we owe. I owe, so off to work I go, right? This is the debt portion. This is the portion of our lives that we want to get rid of. We want to eliminate, because really, debt presumes the future, all right? It already holds us to what we're planning. It already holds us to what we're working towards. Look at Proverbs 22, verse 7. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is a slave to the lender. All right, the next one, you're going to be a little confused, but it's also owe. And that's just what Uncle Sam wanted. It's our taxes. Jesus said it in Matthew. Then give to Caesar what is his, and give to God what is his. Pretty straightforward. Next is grow. That's pretty straightforward. Grow is essentially putting aside your short-term desires for the long-term benefits. Okay? Look what this says in Proverbs 6. Take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their ways and become wise. Though they have no prince or governor or ruler to make them work, they labor hard all summer gathering food for the winter. See, here's the thing with those five categories. At all times, these five categories, these pieces of the pie, are competing with one another. You say, I want to give 20%. I want to put 10% down to debt, and I want to use 20% to savings. But the reality is your financial reality may not be able to do this. And so when we have a healthier understanding, we prioritize the financial desires, we can start putting them in the appropriate category. It's only when we see reality for what it truly is. And they're all competing. They're all competing. Not only are they competing, but they're interconnected, right? So if you spend more in one area, that means you have to spend less in the other area. Money feels complicated sometimes. Because all we see is spreadsheets and numbers and things like that. It feels complicated. But it's complicated because it's intertwined with our life in every situation. That $5 latte every single morning. The new video game every single month. The new car you have to have every single year. The pedicure or manicure you have to have every week. Right? Yeah. Clearly. But it's intertwined with our lives. So if we decide we're going to do this, something has to give. That's just the reality of our perspective of finances. And so hopefully it'll give us to make better decisions today. Now, I want to offer a word of caution here, because finances is one of the biggest things that people argue about. And oftentimes we say, well, this is my understanding of finances, though this is the best way to do it. We listen to the financial gurus and say, that's the only way to do it. It's not. A lot of times we say, well, one person in the relationship is a giver and one's a saver. And the saver looks at the giver and says, oh, they're too loosey-goosey, right? Whereas the giver will say at the saver says, you're too uptight. The truth is that saving and planning is important. But being generous with your resources is also important. There is no cookie-cutter way to do it for every single person in every situation. Everybody's situation is different. It is all a tool. What I'm giving you is tools. It's not necessary. You have to do it this way. Okay? So don't spend your time arguing about that, because the truth is every spending decision is a spiritual decision. It's a matter of the heart. Where our heart is goes along with our checkbook. See, God is interested in your savings. God is interested in your giving. God is interested in your spending. God is interested in you, period. He cares about the whole of you, not just one thing, not just one way to do it. And so you need to understand and learn, what is my style for handling money? What is the way, what is my default in how I handle money? How do I view money? How do I want to use my money? All right, so third element. That's what it is. It's a habit. The third H is your habits. So we're pursuing a changed heart. We're coming to reality with our financial pie. And now we have habits. We have habits that we use with our resources, with our finances, and we need to determine what they are if we're going to get to where we want to go. And I think I can see about five of them within Scripture. There's probably a whole bunch more, but the author here gives us five things that we're going to talk about. And what I love about these five ones is they're really simple. These five habits of finances are really, really simple, but they're oftentimes very difficult to put in place. And it's shaped like a puzzle because we're going to give you five pieces, and they're all intertwined and they're all interconnected. And while they're very, very easy, they're very difficult sometimes to change. Have you ever tried to change a habit? I'm going to stop drinking soda more. I'm going to go exercise more. I'm going to go to bed earlier. Right? You ever tried to change a habit? They're not easy. And so the principles are very, very easy. Implementation, it can be very difficult because it involves commitment, it involves vision, it involves realigning of everything, right? All right, so here's the first habit we need to understand is that spend less than you earn. Pretty straightforward, right? I told you they're easy, but it's oftentimes complicated when it gets down to it. Look at Proverbs 10. Sloth makes you poor, diligent brings wealth. Again, not complicated. But this idea can, all of these five things can work in any economic scenario, anybody's budget. Believe it or not, it can work in the United States government if they would apply it. But they're not easy. Don't spend more than you make. The next habit, give generously. The idea is giving with an open hand and not a closed fist. See, when we do that, when we open up our hands and not hold on to things so tightly, we let go of control that money has over us. Oftentimes, we let money and resources create so much fear and panic in our lives that we can't let go. But when we let go, it releases the control money has on you. Look what it says in 2 Corinthians 9. But remember this, if you give little, you will get little. A farmer who plants just sows a few seeds will get only a small crop. But if he plants much, he will reap much. Everyone must make up his own mind as to how much he should give. Don't force anyone to give more than he really wants to. For cheerful givers are the one God prizes. God is able to make it up to you by giving you everything you need and more, so that there will not be only enough for your own needs, but plenty left over to give joyfully to others. See, oftentimes when we talk about our finances, we're trying to get a control of it. Giving, being generous, it feels counterproductive. It feels like this shouldn't happen because I'm trying to do this and trying to do that. However, if we understand that we're stewards of God's resources and we have a healthy, godly, biblical understanding of what's going on, we understand none of it's ours anyways. And it becomes clear to us on how generosity plays into a healthy financial view. All right, the next habit we're going to work on. Avoid the use of debt, right? Look, debt mortgages our future. It limits us to living. It limits us to giving. It limits us to everything. And we bind ourselves up completely in taking care of that. Now, the reality is in our society, it's almost difficult. I don't know how people can pay, work their way through college anymore, like that old way you could. Very challenging. But look at Psalm 37. The wicked borrows but does not pay back, but the righteous is generous and gives. So when we're a slave to the lender, it limits our generosity. It limits our lives, our living. It limits everything. So work towards getting rid of it as soon as you can. All right, next, plan for financial margin. It never fails, right? You're cruising along in life, everything's fine, and then something happens. And the rule comes up, everything happens in threes, right? So now you got to change you got to replace the tires on the car, you got to fix the roof, and now you have a medical bill to pay for, right? Everything comes up in threes. How are you going to take care of that? The truth is, you will have unexpected benefits or bills and hopefully a benefit, but you'll have unplanned bills and things coming up. How are you going to do it? Look at Luke 14. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? How are we going to handle those unexpected bills or expenses? Things are going to happen that we're not going to be able to see, and you need to have some margin to be able to take care of it. All right, the next habit, set long-term goals. If you don't take the time to think about where you actually want to go, you won't get anywhere. You won't get there. Set a long trip. You want to take a trip, you've got to plan for it. If you want to be utterly generous and buy my Toyota Tacoma, you got to plan for it. Plan for long-term goals. Look what it says in Philippians 3. I press on towards the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Jesus Christ. You need to have a goal of what you're aiming for. What is the goal you want to pursue? Because there's always a trade-off. You trade off a short-term decision for the long-term. A short-term benefit for a long-term reality and health. But to change any habit, you need a plan, and you need one person to hold you accountable, right? Because the New Year's Eve comes, or the new year, or something happens, and we're really excited. I'm going to change my diet. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to get my finances in right. But eventually, that excitement wanes. Going to the gym every day is no more fun. I now want to buy something a little extra for myself. And those small, difficult habits, even though they're simple, become not any fun anymore. Who's going to hold us accountable to make those small changes over the time, right? Set long-term goals. All right, the next element that we're going to talk about, the fourth H, is hope. It's hope. Hope is simply tomorrow's promise. It's a promise of tomorrow. To have hope in our finances simply means that maybe we're excited about our financial future. Maybe we're excited about where we want to go, that we anticipate the things that God is going to do through us and our resources, and it gives us hope, and we are so excited. That is hope. See, when we begin to see our finances and our resources with a clear biblical perspective, we can start to have hope, that we know that we're not alone, because in all things that God is for us and he is with us in all of those areas. But hope is probably that one area that is the quickest to leave us. Look, if everything happens in threes, or we've created that margin and life happens and we're going along, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, see, this is why I can't get ahead. You work out for a month straight and you've lost half a pound. It's demoralizing. It's hard. It's no fun. So hope is important, but it is so finicky. And that's why we talk about having hope. Do we have that graphic for hope? It's like a gauge, right? It's like the gauge that goes across where we're going to call it. It looks like a sun because that's what we hope for in the morning. But think about it as a gauge or a meter. See, we're going to hope for our finances are going to build a healthier future. See, maybe you're struggling and can't even make ends meet. And you're at a place that you're like, I don't even know how to do this. How can your realigned habits get you out of that idea into some financial confidence? Maybe you're just surviving and you're living paycheck to paycheck and you're making a meet, but you have no plans for those margins. You have no plans for that emergency. You have no plans for college or a car. What can a change of habit do to create some margin, to start investing in that savings, to be able to live, to be able to give, to do all those things? But maybe you're stable. Maybe you've worked hard. You're saving a little bit. You're generally ready for the future. You've got some stuff ready. But how can a change of habit put you in a place where you're going to pursue a God-sized dream now, not just get by? But maybe you're secure. You've worked really hard and you've put it away and you're secure and you've got enough and you can pay for the house and you can pay for college or you can retire. But how can a change of habit reset you to think of there's others beside your own personal goal? What is a God-sized goal that you can achieve through a change of habit? Or maybe, really, you've got a surplus and everything's fine. You've been diligent, you've worked hard, and you've got a surplus. You can take the family vacations, you don't have any debt, you've got ready for retirement. In fact, you've got ready for your kids when you pass on, and you're fine. How can a change or realigning of your habit transform you and shape you to give God-sized generosity? Whatever it is, at every step along the way, in every avenue of this meter, God is with you and God will meet you where you're at. He is more interested in your heart and how you use your heart with your finances than he is anything else. He wants to move you and transform you, because money, resources, is just a tool. It's a tool to shape you, to test you, and to be a testimony to the world. Is money a tough topic, especially in church? Yeah, Is it important? Yes, it is vitally important. See, financial confidence and freedom happens as a result of our heart rooted in the truth of what God does in our hearts and how we view our resources and money. And I hope that as we've examined that, have we examined our hearts, have we examined our resources, that our hearts can turn towards Him to have a healthier biblical understanding of financial resource, and our financial future is secure with Him when it's placed in Him. I hope it's challenged you. I hope it's encouraged you.